Baseball and Whatever with your host, Justin McAwee.
Because I was on campus and I had to appear like I was one of the cool kids, I would put the Star Wars book inside one of my textbooks so it looked like I was just studying for class.
All right, look, there's only one return, okay? And it ain't of the king, it's of the Jedi.
Vincent Francis Jankowitz of Ford.
I'm a glorified fact checker.
Last I checked, the most runs in a game wins.
Actually, I am a fact checker.
And Greg Probst!
If you look at most Bond fans' movie rankings, they have Casino Royale and Majesties in their top two. For me, these actually rank in the bottom part of my list. I mean, I love them, but they don't compare to Diamond Rush Forever.
No, stop getting Bond wrong!
Hello, everybody. We're back. Episode 77 of Baseball, whatever. Justin's here. Vinny's here. Greg is taking care of his newborn son. I was right, Vinny. It's James Daniel, not James Daniels. Oh, now I can't hear Vinny. That's not a good sign. Not a good start to the episode. But anyway, we are here. Episode 77. We are going to talk baseball free agency. We're going to talk Bears football and Justin Fields. And we are going to talk our top five Seinfeld episodes of all time. Thank you to everybody that wrote in. We got a lot of people on Twitter that wrote in, a lot of people on Facebook that wrote in. So we are excited to get things underway. First off, thank you again to Belly Up Sports. They are the podcast network that we are signed to under contract with. They are the ones that keep the lights on StreamYard so we can continue to stream online both to YouTube and Twitch. You can find us in a variety. Oh boy. You can find us on a variety of ways. First off, you can find us at youtube.com/baseball whatever. Make sure you go there, like, share, subscribe, all that good stuff. You can find us on Twitter at baseball and what for whatever remains of Twitter. We'll see. I don't know how much longer that'll be up. We'll have to maybe navigate somewhere else there. You can find us on Instagram at baseball and whatever. That might be getting a lot more usage in the near future. You can email the show baseballandwhatever@gmail.com. Listen to us on your podcast apps of choice. We are on all of them. If you're on Apple or Spotify, give us a 5-star review. That would really help the show out. Find other people to listen to it. That would be awesome. And lastly, you can text into the show or leave us a voicemail at 1-913-808-3278. That number again is 1-913-808-FART. All right. There it is. Vinny's back. All right, Vinny, how you doing?
Good.
I don't know what happened. That was weird.
I turned off my mic.
Oh,
that was my fault. So
that's all right.
But okay. I did say that yeah, Greg gave us a talking to about the Daniels.
Yes, he said. I think he said
it wasn't named after an average
lineman offensive lineman for the Bears. Yes.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're gonna be talking Seinfeld episodes because we are obviously big Seinfeld fans. If you like The Office, we did our show on the top five Office episodes last week. But before we get going, we always like to kick off the show trying to find athletes in Chicago that wore the same number as the episode we're on. We're on episode 77. This is getting progressively tougher, but Vinny did say there are two Bulls that wore the number 77.
I think we have 77s across every franchise.
Really?
In Chicago right now. Yep.
Okay. I can't think of any, Vinny.
Okay. Well, this guy played for the Cubs this year. He came from New York.
Okay.
He changed his name.
Oh, Clint Frazier. But I don't
Jackson
know what
it, Frazier.
Jackson. Clint was his middle name? Is that how that worked?
I have no idea. I just remember seeing Jackson Frazier pop up. I'm like, who's this guy?
Yeah. That's I mean, I guess, you know, hey, go by what you want to go by. But yeah, that was a unique one. That's for sure.
Yeah. And he changed his name after he got sent down.
Yes,
I think.
So maybe that was
a whole really weird thing. I feel like there's more to that story.
There had to have been. That's kind of what
got
I'm
leaked.
Too. That's what I'm thinking.
But
too.
That was the only one for the Cubs. Moving on to the White Sox. Do you have anybody?
Luis Roberts. No. Eloy Jimenez. No, he's 74. I have no idea.
It is Yomer Sanchez in 2014. Do you remember Yomer Sanchez?
Second baseman, maybe? Shortstop?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. He wore like Rex. Well, it wasn't really Rex specs, but he had like glasses that he wore.
Yeah, I know. Okay, I know what you're talking about.
And Will Omen.
Oh,
ex Cub pitcher, too.
Yes.
I think,
former Cub.
Right?
Former Cub, yeah. That's right.
That was it for the White Sox. Moving on to the Bears, there was only one player who wore it for the Bears. That number is retired.
Is it retired by somebody that I'll actually know or no?
Is old guy.
Old guy. So, no, I do not know then.
Harold Edward Grange. Red Grange?
Red Grange. Now, see, now that I know. Red Grange.
The Galloping Ghost?
Yes, the Galloping
Ghost. The Wheaton Iceman. I never heard of that nickname before.
No, is he from Wheaton, Illinois?
No.
That's the only Wheaton I know.
He went to high school in Wheaton.
Okay.
I was going to say, he was born in Forksville, Pennsylvania, so I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Didn't know how they would make that connection, but yeah, he went to Wheaton High School.
Okay, fair enough.
So,
gotcha.
All right, moving on to the Bulls. Do you know?
I immediately wanted to scream out Robert Parrish, but I believe he wore 00. I don't think he wore 77. Yeah, so I know that's wrong.
Not Robert Parrish.
Okay.
Vladimir Rabnanovich in 2013.
No, that was not. Well, actually, the Bulls would have been decent. No. No, wait. Would they have been? That would have been Derek Rozier's, right? They would have probably been decent then.
Yeah.
Was he maybe injured?
Yeah, I remember him.
No, I don't remember him either, though.
I remember him a little bit, or the name sounds familiar. And then Joffrey Laverne.
Laverne, no, that doesn't ring a bell at
2017,
all.
2017 French guy.
No, can't say.
Played 1 year with the Bulls. I think he might have come over in the... who did they trade to? I can't even think. Campaign?
Oh,
and,
God, Campaign, that was a dark era.
Who is the collegiate player who was a good shooter, white guy. I think he played forward.
His dad
was a coach. I can't think of the
Doug
guy,
McDermott?
But he was,
no, not Doug. Doug.
Yeah, I think it was McDermott and Payne went to. Is that in 2017?
Was that Doug
2016? 2017 is the is when he split between OKC and Chicago. So I don't know if that's if that's when the trade happened, but it might have been. So
could be. Yeah, could be. I want to say Doug McDermott is still in the league, I think, somewhere. I thought
is he?
Where I saw his name pop up somewhere, but
okay, I'm like 99% sure that's the year. I just pulled up the roster from OKC that year, and Campaign is on there, and so is Doug McDermott. So he came over in the trade for those two guys.
I say, didn't they call? Was he Dougie Buckets or was that Jimmy Buckets?
Yeah, I think so. Dougie. Okay. I have no idea what his college nickname was.
Okay. Okay. Now him, I do remember. Anybody else?
That is it. Those two guys. And okay. Now it's on to the Blackhawks, which my hockey reference page is failing me. Okay, we're back in business here.
Okay.
We got two guys. You should get one of them.
All right. Is one of them a defenseman?
No. One of them's a center.
77. Oh, Kirby Doc. Kirby Doc. Yeah.
Yep.
For now he's a current Montreal Canadian.
Oh, is he?
They traded him. Yeah. They gave up on him.
Was that in the offseason?
Yes.
That's correct. Right. They traded him for draft picks, right?
Yep. You are correct.
Yeah. They got a bad haul, right?
Mm-hmm. For him. Yeah. As usual.
And this guy played 1 year with the Hawks in 1999.
Oh, God. And what position was he? 77.
Bench warmer. Defenseman.
Was that Paul Coffey?
Oh, this guy's
Paul
a
Coffey?
Hall of Famer.
Paul Coffey.
Yeah, there we go.
He was good. He wasn't very good with the Hawks from what I remember.
I was assuming so. He only played 1 year,
yeah,
year with the Hawks.
The Hawks in the 90s were notorious, or especially the late 90s. Was it late 90s, I'm guessing?
Yeah, 99.
Okay, around that time, they were notorious for they would pick up guys that had like Hall of Fame careers but were clearly way over the hill and probably shouldn't be playing anymore. But the Hawks were like, hey, here's a couple million. Come play for us to bring in fans. And that's all they did. So
I feel like every Chicago franchise does that at some point. I mean, the White Sox did it getting Griffey and Jimmy Rollins.
Yep.
And, yeah, it was, yeah. The
that's the Chicago
the Cubs
way.
Have done it, too. Yeah, so It's just, I think it's just a Chicago staple, right? To get these guys that are.
How you know you're watching a Chicago sports team if there's not some over the hill future Hall of Famer that doesn't.
Yeah, any that guy was really good like 10 years ago.
Yeah. Oh man, let's get him now.
Right. That's it for 77s in Chicago sports history.
All right, I did better than I thought I would on that one. I'm not. You did. Lie.
I was impressed.
All right. Well, we have no comments, no listener emails or write-ins this week. Vinny, you got any hot takes this week? Did you ever get around to finishing, what's it
There's
called?
There's still another, I think next week's its last episode. Last season? Okay. 12, last episode. 12 episodes. I did not watch this week's. I've been busy with work, but, yeah, I don't have any more takes on that.
Okay. No more takes. I don't know. This week has been too exhausting. I don't have the energy for a hot take this week, I'll be honest. All right, so let's real quick read our sponsor here. We'd like to thank our partner In the Clutch for joining us on Baseball and Whatever. In the Clutch is your awesome sports apparel company that is known for their licensed MLB, Negro League, and MLS apparel, along with great shirts to rep your favorite retro hockey, baseball, and football teams. Even better, head to intheclutch.com right now, and at checkout, use promo code BASEBALLANDWHAT to get 10% off your order. So if you're getting ready to do your Black Friday shopping and you want to buy a cool sports athletic shirt or athletic wear, head to intheclutch.com, use baseball and whatever at checkout, and you will get 10% off your order. Thanks again to the folks over at In the Clutch. All right, let's get to the baseball talk.
Baseball.
Welcome back to Major League Baseball. Sort of.
Taking a look at Chicago's two favorite teams and other happenings around the MLB.
All right, so like we talked about last week, in the offseason, we're going to take one position and kind of see where each team is with that. So, Vinny, tell us, what position are we taking this week for our Chicago sports teams?
We'll look at the first baseman.
All right, first base. First base.
Cubs need a first baseman. Currently don't really have anybody that could go with Matt Mervis in-house, but really shouldn't just rely on that. That just screams like rolling with Patrick Wisdom and Frank Schwindel.
Yeah.
We don't need to do that again. We can look at free agents. We'll start with the Cubs this week since the need's there. There's not really much the White Sox can – I mean, they can get a first baseman, but they already have multiple guys that could probably play first base on their roster unless they trade one of them. Andrew Vaughn or Gavin Sheets have both been linked to playing there. Unless they bring Jose Abreu back, then at that point they should probably trade one of the other two guys mentioned. So
right,
we'll just leave the White Sox off for now because that's not really a need. I mean, either, yeah, the only person I think that makes sense to sign is Jose Abreu. So for the Cubs, guys out there right now, Brandon Belt, Jose Abreu, Josh Bell, Miguel Sano, or is it Sano?
I think it's Miguel Sano? Sano?
Sano? Maybe? Okay.
Yeah.
Carlos Santana, Trey Mancini.
I would love to see Trey Mancini here, but that would mess up Matt Mervis, I'm not going to lie. So
Ulysky Gurriel? How do you pronounce that?
Yes, Gurriel. Is that
Gurriel.
Yuri Gurriel's brother?
Okay. Greg Bird, Ronald Guzman, Jesus Aguilar, Mike Ford. That's it. The other, I don't recognize anybody else. Guy from Minnesota, Tomas Tellez.
Oh, and is that Chris... Rowdy? Is that Rowdy Tellez?
Oh, is that? It says Minnesota.
Oh, then no, that's not him then.
From Minnesota, yeah. Maybe it's his brother. I don't know.
Maybe.
And then Chris Marrero, which doesn't ring a bell either. So I think the youngest of the bunch here is Ronald Guzman from New York Yankees, bats left. And Miguel Sano is 29 and a half, so he'll be 30 when he season starts. But it's all a bunch of 30-year-olds.
The smart money would be on Abreu because of his age, his ability, and he fits in perfectly with platooning with Matt Mervis. Mm-hmm. But in terms of stat-wise, man, I would love to see Trey Mancini at first base, but that definitely messes up your pipeline projections with, you know, Matt Mervis. So I don't know.
Not really. He bats right. So
yes.
You would still get it. You could still split there if you wanted to. Him, you know, him being 30, SpotTrack has him as his market value is $18 million. He's the most expensive of the bunch. So I like Jose Abreu. I know, you know, his savant splits. If you just look at what the basic metrics, he's in the top of, you know, the top 90th percentile. And let me pull it up real quickly here. But he's in the 90th percentile in a lot of the hitting categories. So, mm-hmm. You know, his slash line wasn't good last year. You know, it wasn't bad. He had an OPS of 824, 304, 378, 446. So, I mean, it was still really good. Right. His average exit velocity, 93 percentile. Max exit velocity, 89th percentile. Hard hit percentage, 97th percentile. Weighted on base percentage, 96th percentile. I mean, the guy still hits the ball really well. His defense isn't that good, and it's probably not going to get any better at age 35. But right. With the DH, you can still hit. He can still hit on the days that he's not playing first base, if you really want him to. And he hits Wrigley Field really well.
That's
I don't
the
have
one
the splits
really
up
nice
for
thing.
Yeah, I mean, he I it's ridiculous numbers that he's got at Wrigley, but yeah, he's been very good. You know, his market value right now is about 12.7 million. Mm-hmm. So he's the third least of the bunch on market values listed. So he's 35 years old. He's one of the older free agents. He's what, the third oldest first baseman out there. But if you can get him for 2-3 year deal, maybe, mm-hmm. you know, with that third year being, you know, an easier out for them to, you know, to get out of that contract. I think it's a good bridge candidate for Matt Mervis. Mm-hmm. You know, you can play the splits with the right left. So yeah, he's my choice there. Like I said, he's still hitting the ball very well, and yeah. They need offense. They need somebody hitting the ball, making good contact, and his numbers are fantastic in Wrigley. Really wish I knew how to look up player stats by ballpark. But yeah, so he's my choice. I don't know if you have somebody that you.
No,
like,
I mean, I'll be honest. I think it just makes the most sense. Like, he clearly enjoys being in Chicago as long as he kept resigning with the White Sox. That is a good fit. You just got to go, 7-8 miles north to the Wrigley, yep. Wrigleyville. In terms of age, you know, he's not going to be coming in looking for an extended contract. He's probably going to be looking for a shorter term deal, which lines up perfectly with Matt Mervis's projection. If Matt Mervis is the guy down the road, I mean, he still has to come to the big leagues and do what he's doing in the minors. So that fits. The fact that, like you said, the splits where you could have Mervis, you know, take on lefties, right? And then righties, lefties.
No, righties.
Righties. You could have Jose Abreu hit lefties and then also DH on the days that Matt Mervis, like you said, is at first. It just makes the most sense for a competitive team that is also continuing to try and launch their prospects to the next level. So, I mean, I am all in on that. And I know there's been not leaks, but things of, you know, that nature saying that this is kind of where the Cubs are going. So we'll just kind of have to wait and see. I'm kind of bummed that nothing really big has happened quite yet. But
it's still early.
It's still early. I mean,
free agency started just like, what, this
last
Thursday,
last Friday, something like that.
Yeah, and plus you still got guys that they're waiting to be non-tendered,
right?
Like Cody Bellinger.
Yes.
So
I mean,
there's
like,
still a lot to go on.
There's a lot. You got the GM meetings in December, the first week of December usually happen. Is that in Florida? I want to say. You know, so that'll be a big deal. I'm excited to see what happens. I have a level of Cubs optimism that I have not had for many, many years. So I am.
Oh, that's shocking.
I know. So watch it all crumble in front of me this season.
It probably will.
It probably will. Do you? I don't know. I don't know if we want to talk about it, but the Cubs did make a trade this week for a super utility guy. That's kind of how would you describe him? Not super. First of all, they acquired his name, super utility guy, Miles Mastrobuoni from the Tampa Bay Rays in exchange for right-handed pitcher Alfredo Zuraga. Mastrobuoni, man, I am butchering this guy's last name.
Mastrobuoni.
Okay.
He is a career
286, 367, and 395 hitter in six minor league seasons. He made his debut in 2022, and I believe he's like 26 or 27.
He's 26 right now.
Okay.
So
he's been added. He's been added. He played 80 games last season. At four different positions in the minors: shortstop 81 games, right field 94 games, left field 110, and second base 247. His natural position is middle of the infield, but he's kind of gone all over the place. He did have a breakout season last year at AAA Durham. He slashed 300, 377, and 469 with 16 homers, 64 RBIs, and 23 stolen bases with a weighted runs created plus of 126. Nice. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I feel like he could be a late bloomer. Maybe, you know, I'm not talking Patrick Wisdom and Frank Schwindel levels of power or
Schwindel's. Yeah.
Yes. But another one of those guys where 27, 26, almost 28, whatever, in that upper 20s range, you know, never really got a chance in the pros. And now he's maybe going to be decent, you know, decent guy off the bench if he can put it together. So I was kind of surprised. The guy they did give up, Alfredo Zuraga, he's 21. He pitched in low A Myrtle Beach and high A South Bend for the Cubs last season. He had a 1.93 ERA against those low A and high A opponents. So then he was on the 60-day injured list after that. So I don't know. I mean, he looks like he had some good talent there in low A and high A. But again, that is so far removed from AAA in the MLB at this point. This guy's more of a, I don't want to say a sure thing, because he's definitely not a sure thing, but
he's more MLB ready.
Yes. And I think he can come in and fit a need that they might have right off the bat of being a utility guy I guess Nick Madrigal might be a utility guy this season too, but I don't know how that would work.
They had McKinstry too last year.
He'll definitely fit a need and you know, they did something. Tampa needed to move guys around, so I totally get why the Cubs did it.
It'll be interesting. Yeah, I saw rumors that he might be the backup option if they don't get a center fielder to platoon with Morel out there. So
yeah,
we'll see about that.
I don't.
Yeah,
there's
still a lot to go on for the off season.
Yeah, the only other thing really with the Cubs that I keep seeing is just how it seems like there's a lot of, you know, Chicago beat writers and things saying they keep seeing links to both Carlos Correa for the Cubs and Cody Bellinger to play center field if he gets not tenured by the Dodgers. I don't know. I mean, other than that, I also saw a thing that Senga was being kind of being looked at by the Giants. So there's some competition there for the Cubs. We'll see how that goes. But I guess really it's just a matter of waiting for more to come down the pipeline. We'll see what happens.
Yep. Yeah, I saw that too with Correa. He's been linked heavily with the Cubs.
Yeah.
And I think, who's it, Savada Sharma, with the Athletic, they had like a round table discussion on Marquee. I don't know if you saw that.
I saw a little bit
He was saying that he's not expecting a lot of big contracts signed this offseason like Cody Bellinger got for these guys that are around 30 years old. So he also said he was expecting the Cubs to get Carlos Correa. I can't imagine if he went that far to say that, but I know he was, which puts the Cubs in play for a lot of the guys if teams aren't willing to go in and give out these big long year contracts. That's not what the Cubs wanted to do last year. That was evident, and it's probably their MO going forward. So that plays well into their hand on trying to get a one of the premier shortstops. So
it does. I'll be curious to see what happens. I think I don't know. More excitement is coming down the way. It's just a matter of when, you know, things start happening. We'll see. I feel like once one thing kind of gets going, then everything, all the other dominoes fall into play, especially when the big names like, you know, Correa and Trey Turner and Bogarts and Dansby Swanson and all those guys, once they start signing, then I think it'll be a fire sale for signings at that point. So
exactly.
All right. Should we jump over to the Bears game?
Yes.
All right, let's do it.
Manures of the Midway. Where the guys talk the pile of horse crap that is the Chicago Bears.
I mean, when you consider the other choices, manure is actually pretty refreshing.
All right, we are now moving on to our... Gosh, I feel like this is just becoming the Justin Fields is Incredible segment, and this week was no different. I still couldn't believe that they lost to the Lions. I almost said the Tigers. They lost to the Lions. Wrong sport. They lost to the Lions, but it was such an exciting game to watch. It was just back and forth, and you know, the defense still really can't do anything, but the offense was just incredible. Some of those runs that Justin Fields was doing, I think like even the first play of the game, he just took it and ran like a good 10, 15 yards. It was incredible. Yep. I don't know, what was your takeaway from the Bears? I'm gonna pull up some quotes from the beat writers that I have to that I have a problem with while you're sharing that. Go ahead.
Oh, good. No, I have a whole page of notes here to go over.
All right, let's get into it.
Okay, so Justin Fields, he's getting better. Just something I noticed during the game, he's keeping his eyes downfield more. Mm-hmm. There was a play where the pocket collapsed on the sides, and he actually stepped up into what was a makeshift pocket because the line had just crumbled. But he found a hole there, and he was able to keep his eyes downfield and hit St. Brown for a first down. That was great to see. So things are getting better, although people still want to say that he's just a running back, which is just... Yeah. Ridiculous. Was it prior drive he ran out? He's making better decisions too on, I feel like, when he needs to throw and when he needs to pass. You know, prior drive he had a rollout and he kept it. It was like a 2 yard. He could have maybe have tried to hit Mooney, or, you know, probably a couple weeks ago, maybe he tries to hit a home run ball. I don't know if someone was going, I couldn't tell from the camera angle if someone had gone down the line and was open, or he'd try for that, but he just ran for the first down. It was 2 yards. It was a third down play. He ran for the first down to keep the drive alive. That was good to see. So
yeah,
I feel like his decision making downfield are getting better week to week. You see that. It is evident if you're watching the game. But how about Cole Kmet?
Oh my gosh, he's incredible.
The past couple weeks they've been getting him involved even more. I mean, he's really starting to flash these past couple weeks. And Cole Kmet just proves that it takes time in the NFL to develop into something. You know, he's been, when he gets the ball in his hands and he can get ahead of steam, he's bulldozing over guys. That's great to see from him.
It's incredible.
And, you know, he's got, what, the most touchdowns, I think, in the 3 week span out of NFL tight ends?
I want to say he's got like 5 touchdowns in the last handful of weeks, which he only had 2 or 3 in his last 2 seasons. So, like, he's doubled his total. I mean, that touchdown pass that Fields had to him earlier in the game, where I don't know if there was a breakdown in coverage on the Lions' part, but he was just wide open. And as soon as I saw him kind of have to turn back to catch it, I'm like, oh, he's going to mess this up. And he didn't. So, to his credit, no. He looks like a legit tight end and a legit receiver out there. It's crazy to me. I can't believe it. I can't believe it.
And I was wrong about Cole Kmet, because I, you know, after what, 2 years, I was like, oh yeah, maybe he's not going to be a productive. He just add him to the list of bum tight ends that the Chicago Bears have run through the franchise, but he's starting to flash. So that's good to see if he can keep that up. Fields' first touchdown run, when the play broke down, it looked like he had Mooney open for like a split second. But I know our favorite, everybody's favorite beat reporter, Dan Weider, was like, "Oh, he Mooney was open on that." But if you looked at it, the cornerback was sitting underneath that route, and he could have, if he would have thrown that ball, he would have just jumped the route, either intercepted it and taken it to the house, or, you know, probably tackled Mooney, or Mooney would have dropped it. It was the right play to not pull the trigger on that. Again, his decision making is getting better.
Yes.
And man, he knocked a guy out. That was pretty awesome to see from a quarterback knocking a guy out of the game. Wow.
It was just insane. Yeah, absolutely insane.
Yep. And the Bears are really gonna miss Khalil Herbert.
Yes, that's going to be a huge
going
loss.
On the IR. He's running great that game, and I don't know where they're going to get that production. I know it's been floated out this week by, it looked like, just, you know, bloggers and people on Twitter that Velus Jones maybe could get that Cordell Patterson type role where he's getting handoff. I know Greg's probably, if he's going to be listening to this later, will be screaming. I know Greg does not like Velus Jones. But Velus Jones, I don't know. The couple times I've seen him when he's not dropping muffing punts, if you you know, you don't have to put him back out there on the punt return duty, but get the ball in his hands. If, you know, handing it off, you know, maybe he's fast, and he looks like he can be elusive enough to be a running back, but, you know, or a gadget type out of the backfield. But you got to get a find a way to get this guy. I mean, he's third round rookie this year, so at this point, the way the season's going, why not just see if it works?
Right.
Get him out there. I'd rather see him out there than Dante Pettis, to be honest.
Yeah, I think you're right.
That pick six was awesome. That was bad.
That was rough. That was rough. You're right. That was a rough one.
It wasn't good, but that was a smart play by the Lions defender. Instead of, because it was a screen pass to Kmet, but he didn't bite on it. It was Hutchinson on the defensive end. He kind of stepped towards Field and then dropped back, and that's what I think threw Fields off. He tried to lob it too much, and then that's when he overthrew Kmet, and then the Lions defender took it to the house. But, you know, people, you know, again, Dan Weider wanted to, he was probably just salivating when Fields threw that pick six, but it was great to see the way he responded to that with that long touchdown run, which technically negated it. I don't put this law. I know people say, well, Justin Fields lost this game because he threw a pick six, but he responded with a touchdown. The defense gave up 14 points in the fourth quarter alone for the Lions to win that game, and to put it on Fields because he threw a pick six when he then turned around and answered it with a spectacular run is just unfair. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And then let's see here. Jack Sanborn. How about that guy?
Yeah. Badger, former Badger, right?
Yeah, 12 tackles, 2 sacks in the game. Almost had a interception, which got overturned for a really, really bad pass interference with the hands to the face, which didn't look like hands to the face. But we won't go there again with the refs. We already did that last week.
We've done that enough this season.
Yep. But yeah, the defense is bad right now. I guess Sanborn, and, you know, he's something to watch to see if he can kind of improve on that. I mean, filling in for Roquan, he's now going to be the starter going forward. That was his first start, second game played, because they just let go of the guy they got back in the Roquan Smith trade.
Yeah, I saw that. He's already gone. Yeah, they cut him.
So, it'll be interesting to see what he can do going forward. And I know a lot of people were talking about, well, you know, the fourth quarter, they only had, I don't know, was it like a reception and 6 yards or something like that on the final drive, and it wasn't good. When the Bears needed to pass, they couldn't pass. Well, the problem is it's not Justin Fields, which people try to make it sound like. It's just the offense as a whole. Once they become one-dimensional, it's really easy. You know, they just pin their ears back on defense and just blitz and can easily get to them. They got to Justin Fields on the last drive, 2 sacks on the final 2 plays, and it was 5 guys rushing. It wasn't anything. They didn't bring, you know, 7 guys or anything like that. It was just 5 guys, and the Bears just couldn't do anything. The wide receivers couldn't get open. The line couldn't block, and the offense is very dangerous when they have that ability to run or that illusion to run because they're a very good running team.
Yes.
But once they become one-dimensional, it becomes very easy and the deficiencies on offense are just magnified. Mm-hmm. And it has nothing to do with Justin Fields' ability to throw. Absolutely none. Although people try to play that narrative, which is just ridiculous, and it's just a simplistic view of this team.
Yeah. First off, Glucose joins the chat. He says, I missed the baseball talk, huh? Yeah, no, unfortunately,
it's
going to be kind of slim pickings. You can always, you know, go back and listen afterwards. We talk a little bit about the Cubs and the White Sox first base prospects for this offseason. But, okay, so Vinny, I went ahead and pulled this up. I was watching this video while I was running on the treadmill. It was, it was Danny Parkins on The Score kind of reading the Riot Act to some of the beat writers. So I pulled what he who he singled out, and I just got to say, I don't always agree with Danny Parkins on Chicago Sports Radio, but spot on in this point. So, okay, he said David Haw. If you're not familiar with Chicago, David Haw is a radio morning host out here. He also used to write for the Sun Times, I think. Tribune? Maybe it's Tribune?
I think it's Tribune.
And he said, at some point, and I'm paraphrasing here, they need to gain experience winning. They can't keep losing. Does he know the team they have this season? Does he know the goal of this season? Does he know what's hopefully coming next season? Like, that just seems like such a stupid, that whole you can't learn to win unless you learn to win. Like, that doesn't, it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. It doesn't make any sense to me. I don't know about you, but.
We talked about that earlier in the year. Listen, for me, winning is icing on the cake. We want to see the offense progress. That's what they're doing. Obviously, losing, these guys want to win. And that kind of goes back to that whole Green Bay thing where Justin Fields was talking about they're the guys putting in the hours. And that's exactly right. You know, I had no problem with whatever you said. And this is exactly the point. Whereas fans, like, they lose to the Lions, and it's like, okay, well, now they have a better draft position. Like, that's, you know, that's kind of the goal. Like, the icing on the cake is just them maybe getting some good wins here and there, and, you know, but still seeing that progression from the offense. That's the main goal, right? You want to see Justin Fields progress and start getting comfortable as an NFL quarterback. It's. You don't want them to lose out. I think that would be kind of depressing, you know, that's going to really dampen the locker room. They should pepper in a win here and there. It would be nice. But, as a fan, it doesn't matter. As a player, it probably matters a little bit more, but I guess that's where Matt Eberflus is going to earn his paycheck, is by keeping that locker room and those players playing hard throughout the rest of the year, even if they aren't winning.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. So, okay, so that was David Haw. Patrick Finley of the Chicago Sun-Times, you know, I'm again paraphrasing, said something along the lines of, you can't even mention that the Bears need to win without Bears Twitter getting all over you and being upset with you. Yes. Again, just like you just said, this season is not about winning. I don't understand what these writers are looking for. And then lastly, Dan Wiederer, who you mentioned earlier of the Tribune. He's awful. I was so glad Dan Bernstein on The Score was giving it to him. He said, and I wrote this down, they need to show they can be successful winning through the air in games that are late. Okay, but that's not the goal right now. The goal is for progress for the offense. Yep. Next year, if they're not winning games late, then yes, that should be the goal. But you have to learn to crawl before you can walk. The Bears are still crawling right now. This is the crawling phase. Next year, you know, as things progress, then yes, then we can move on to worrying about these other things, but they're not there yet. And that was like you said, we've known that since the beginning of the season. So I don't know why this narrative is trying to change. It's like, you know what, let's enjoy this really cool thing that, I want to say it was Paul Charchian who runs Is it Guillotine League? Guillotine Fantasy Football League's up in Minnesota. He was on the radio this morning talking about how, for the first time like ever, a Bears quarterback is ranked number one in fantasy quarterback pickups this year, this season, this week, whatever, yep. You know, or highest points per game projected. When was the last time that happened for a Bears quarterback? Never?
Jake Cutler, number one? Cutler during that 1 year with Trestman. When they had like the top ranked offer,
first
that
season
was,
with
that
Trestman,
was it. Yeah. And, but, I mean, I don't even think he was the number one ranked quarterback, because that was the year Peyton Manning went off with Denver.
With the
never would be the probably correct answer.
So yeah, I don't know. Like I'm very pessimistic usually, but I feel like even as a fan going in, like I said, we knew this season was going to be awful because of the way the salary cap was lined up. They have like the third most dead cap in the entire league, so your roster pickings are very slim, your talent is slim, and Justin Fields is still like making a mountain out of a molehill. I don't know, whatever other analogy I can give you there, but I don't
chicken
understand.
Chicken salad from chicken shit.
There you go. That's the one I was looking for. I couldn't remember. But yeah, it's frustrating as hell.
It is. And everybody that it's ridiculous that, well, he needs to throw for X amount of yards. That's just, that's ludicrous. I mean, you got to look, he's doing more than just throwing, and they're calling a lot more runs and design runs for him. For a quarterback, you really should be looking at total yards.
Yes.
His rushing and his passing combined, because that's yards he's creating. And for the past, if you go back to the past 4 weeks, he's averaging 271 yards total offense just mm-hmm. through him alone, which is great. And they're a run first team. So I you know, people that are saying he needs to hit, you know, so-and-so mark, he needs to be a 300-yard passer. Well, he's doing more than just throwing for 300, you know. He's doing more than just throwing.
He doesn't have the best wide receivers to surround him either. I mean,
no. And that, you know, that's another thing is Claypool's usage was down, but they kind of addressed that today in the media, where Claypool had said that the Bears route trees are very complex compared to what he was, or what the Pittsburgh Steelers have their wide receivers run. And Luke Getsy said he didn't want to, you know, simplify the offense so Claypool can be on the field, only because that's going to hurt the offense more. So there's that, and that's why he was 16 plays he was out there for, mm-hmm. Which was down like, you know, 10 plays. I think he was like 26 the week before, so he was used less this past week, which everybody is concerned about. It's just, you know, I think it's just the way it is what it is. Hopefully he can be out there more the rest of the season. Hopefully they can start throwing more than 20 times a game. They threw 20 times in the Denver game. And that was another thing too. They had a 14-point lead going into the fourth quarter when everybody's like, oh, they need to pass through the air. They were trying to run out the clock.
Yeah,
like that's what you do. It's
generally how you
win. Is it really the offense's fault the defense let the Lions drive 90 yards? And the fact is, you know, in that game, their third down defense was terrible. How many third and eights were they giving up chunk plays?
Yep.
And they gave up, even the last drive of the game to seal it, they gave up a third and eight run. They gave up. Like, you know, like, it's just frustrating.
You're right.
And I don't know if that's, you know, I don't think so, but that's me wearing my tinfoil hat. Maybe they're calling bad defensive plays and telling the safety or the corners to play off guys so they can, you know, lose these games. I don't know, but the defense is just, man, they need to come up with third down stops. It's just pathetic.
It's not good.
No, and that also plays into, you know, Justin Fields having the ball in his hands. If the defense is out there, you know, letting other teams go 90 yards down the field, that how many times is he going to be able to touch the ball? How many times are they going to be out there for offense? Not a lot. So, you know, it's just the knocks against Justin Fields aren't warranted. People really need to evaluate better.
Do you have a prediction for this week's game against the Atlanta Falcons?
Ooh. I'm going to go.
They're 4-6, by the way.
What?
They're 4-6 this season.
The Falcons?
Yes.
I'm going to say 31-24 Bears.
Wow. A lot of fun.
Another high-scoring right. affair.
I'll go. Oh boy.
Are they playing in Atlanta?
I believe they're playing in Atlanta. Let me check.
The Ryan Pace revenge game.
Yes, it is. Yes,
and
it
Phil
is.
Emery. Isn't Phil Emery Phil down in?
Phil Emery is there too. Yes, they just need Mark Trussman to come back from the CFL, and it would be it would be a Bears East
trifecta.
Or Bears South. I don't know what you'd call that, but
right.
All right, I'm gonna go. Let me think here. I'm going to go 31. Oh, man, that defense. this could get bad very quickly. I'm going to go 31-34 Falcons.
Ooh, okay.
I'm going to take the Falcons.
You know, it's funny, too, how good the defense was at the beginning of the year. We were talking about, they haven't given up a second-half touchdown.
Right.
And then that just all went to crap. After the Dallas game pretty much broke them.
I know. I saw some stuff on Twitter the other day that the Steelers fans, Eagles fans, I'm sorry. The Eagles fans do not really like Robert Quinn. They think
he only has one sack this year.
Yeah, it's bad. It's bad. I feel like last season was an aberration. And the season before that, he didn't look that good either. So I think he's returning to his mean or regressing at this point. But all right. Should we get to the whatever?
Sure.
All right.
Why not?
Now it's time for whatever.
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 Whatever you want.
Whatever I want.
Whatever, dude. Irrelevant.
Whatever, dude.
All right, Vinny, I'm handing it over. Take it away.
All right. Welcome to Whatever Baseball. I got to come up with my own thing. I can't take Greg's
thing. Well,
but
I mean, Greg's going to be out of commission for quite a while. So, I mean,
I guess that's my way to honor Greg, I guess, right?
You can honor him that way. I don't know. I can honor him by saying stuff about James Bond that isn't true.
No, stop getting Bond wrong!
I'm trying to think of something off the top of my head that I know about Bond.
Just don't even start.
Jaws was probably the best villain in the Daniel Craig Bond movies.
No, stop getting Bond wrong!
Oh, we do have... I forgot about this in terms of the MLB. Glucose writes in the chat, the Mariners did trade for Teoscar Hernandez from the Blue Jays. That was a huge trade. I was really psyched when I saw that. I'm glad he brought that up. I completely forgot about that. Mariners are not giving up. They're making another run for next season. You love to see it. So hopefully Scott Servais and the boys can get over that hump and get out of the first round. Well, I guess technically they got out of the wild card round, right? But
yep.
So get to the
for something.
Next round after that. So thank you for writing in, Glucose. All right, Vinny, back to you.
All right, this week we are ranking our top five Seinfeld episodes. We went from The Office last week, and we're doing Seinfeld this week only because we are lazy and
we're tired.
Justin came. Yeah, we're limping into the holiday. The Thanksgiving weekend. So we did Seinfeld this week. Both of us are pretty big Seinfeld fans.
Yes.
Greg's probably the biggest Seinfeld fan.
I would agree.
I think some of the stuff I'm going to get wrong, I can just picture him getting upset with me, or if I misquote an episode, he'll probably let us hear our mistakes. He's gonna let us hear about that. This was tough. There's so many good episodes, Justin.
Yes, there are.
A lot of good lines. I kind of just went with the first five that popped into my head, because if I thought about it too long, I would be my honorable mention list would be probably two pages long.
Oh yeah.
Easily. So this one, I just kind of went with the first ones that popped in my head.
Okay.
I don't know about you and the approach that you took.
There were like three or four that popped into my head right away. And it's funny, and I was talking to your sister about this afternoon, is there's some episodes where there's just certain parts that just stick with you, whether it's quotes or lines or scenes. And then I'm like, okay, well, what did the rest of the cast do during that episode? And
right.
I honestly can't remember, but I know just because that one arc of the show, whatever character they were focusing on, was so strong. It just carries the whole episode. So,
agreed.
Yeah, for sure. But no, there was four that really came to mind right away, and I literally have like six honorable mentions. I'm looking at which one I want to slot in for number five, and I'm trying to avoid like recency bias here, but because okay. I mean it's on all the time on Comedy Central and on YouTube TV. We just have it set to record like anytime it's on, so I always go back and just watch old episodes. I should just go on Netflix and do that, but I don't. But
you should. I have Netflix just for that reason.
I've been trying so hard to get Erica to let us get rid of Netflix because I don't watch anything on Netflix anymore. I don't know about you, but that's just me.
We just watched, as we're divulging from our topic here, but we still watch Netflix, and I know okay. our son, he likes to watch a lot of the cartoons that are on there, so we keep it for that.
Okay,
but Seinfeld's a one that we like to have on in the background. Now that they don't have The Office anymore, although my wife isn't the biggest Office fan, Seinfeld's. It's nice that
number
that's
one,
on there, so we're gonna
for sure.
keep that for the convenience fee of the same reason that why we had it for when The Office was on there. It's just easy to have
put
it
on background
exactly.
noise. Yeah,
I'll start since you don't have your number five.
Okay.
I will start. My number five is The Red Dot. This is the one where Elaine gives George a job at Pendant Publishing. And so as a thank you, he gets her a cashmere sweater. But it is heavily discounted because of the little red dot on it, mm-hmm. Which this one is funny. Elaine, this is a kind of a holiday episode, too, because this is where they have the holiday party and Jerry puts down his alcoholic beverage and Elaine's boyfriend is an alcoholic and he puts down his drink too, and him and Jerry get in an argument and then the guy walks away and picks up Jerry's alcoholic beverages.
Yep.
And then they have the discussion on about he's off the wagon. Well, shouldn't he be off
the
wagon to begin with?
Yeah,
if he's on the wagon, isn't he drinking? Isn't that where the alcohol is at? And they were trying to figure out that whole term of phrase and where that kind of originated, which is kind of funny. This one I also like too, because during Jerry's stand-up scenes they have the guy in the audience.
Yes.
And he's heckling Jerry, so it kind of breaks it from the normal
ball,
tradition of him just being, you know, doing stand-up, and it's kind of, you know, them just showing stand-up and people laughing. They actually had somebody in the episode out there, you know, heckling him, which is, you know, it's kind of fun. But that was good with the cashmere sweater, the red dot. And then that's also the episode where George gets fired because he sleeps with the cleaning lady.
Was that
on
wrong?
Because
I gotta plead ignorance if
right?
that was wrong.
I love that line. Oh, that is great. It just that whole scene with George, and then the reason she squeals is because he gave her the cashmere sweater
the
and she
dot,
noticed the red dot. Yep. And the only reason Elaine noticed the red dot is because of Kramer.
Yeah.
And he saw it from like halfway across the the apartment at Jerry's place. Yeah, it was,
right.
I love that episode. It's a good
that's
one.
A
so
good
it came
one.
In at number five. So
that's an excellent one. And I know that's one that people that wrote in that they brought up several times. So all right, my number five. I moved my number four to my number five, and I put one of my honorable mentions in at number four because I a last minute change of heart. All right, my number five though, I am probably one of my biggest favorite characters on this show is Jerry Stiller's Frank Costanza. I love that character. So number five for me is the episode The Fatigues. If you're unfamiliar with that episode, I'll read the storyline here on IMDb. Kramer volunteers to set up the Jewish singles mixer. He has a hard time finding a cook for the event until he learns that Frank was a cook in the Korean War. Frank refuses to cook for the event because he experienced a severe case of shell shock. Meanwhile, Elaine tries to get rid of an unruly employee in Peterman's mailing room, but winds up promoting the guy instead. That is the guy in the fatigues, actually. Jerry dates a woman with a mentor, but he gets weirded out when he finds out that the mentor is dating hack comic Kenny Banya. Jerry, inspired by this, decides to take Banya under his wing and mentor Banya to the top. George has to give a report on the subject of risk management for the Yankees. So, that whole spot, that whole time, that whole scene of Jerry Stiller or Frank Costanza sitting down in their house in on I'm assuming it's on Long Island. I don't know. Or maybe it's Queens. Yeah. I'm not sure. But
it might be Queens.
One or the other, right? And he's sitting there with Kramer and he's having this flashback. And, you know, they tried to put makeup on him so he looks younger, but he doesn't look any younger.
Right.
And he's, you know, he's like, oh, I'll just pull up the quote. I found, what's the exact line here? Let's see. Men were keeling all over around me. I could still hear the retching, screaming. I sent 16 of my own men to the latrines that night. He's like, little Jimmy wanted to go home. He went home all right with a hole in his colon.
And I love the way he prepares that. They show him preparing them. He's just throwing spices on it and
yes.
then smacks it with the spatula. Like,
yes.
Okay, what... What is that gonna
like,
do?
What does that have to do with anything? And then I love there's a scene with Estelle and Frank, and Estelle's like, here's your omelet, and Frank's like, it's dry, and she's like, well, that's the way I make it. He goes, well, it sucks.
Right? And then he cracks the eggs. I'm back, baby.
Yeah, it's great. I love that episode so much. And then at the end, obviously, someone starts choking. He assumes
the guy in the fatigues.
Sick. The fatigues, yeah, starts choking because I think yeah. gets hit. Doesn't he get hit or I can't remember? Trip?
No,
what happens?
Yeah, I think like a Lane slaps him in the back or something like that, and he starts choking on the food. And Frank thinks he's getting sick on the food, and then you know has his PTSD, and they start playing the music from Platoon.
Yes,
And then he starts flipping the tables and everything to ruin all the food.
Yeah, that is love. So yeah, that's my number five. That is a great episode. That is like pure Frank Costanza right there in my mind. So
yep, that's a good number. Is that your number five?
That was my number five, yes.
Okay, that was a very good number five.
Thank you.
And I totally forgot about that one, too, but that is a good one.
I didn't realize, too, when I was looking it up, there was some trivia about it. Did you know, apparently, that the flashback scene in the Korean War was supposed to be way more graphic, where you could actually see them vomiting onto the camera lens?
But really?
The executives thought that took it a little too far, so they pulled that part, which
that would have been pretty funny.
Makes
they
a
done
lot
that.
Of sense. Yes.
Yep.
But, yeah.
No, and that's always the one with Banya where he goes, "That's gold, Jerry.
That's gold, Jerry. Gold."
Right.
And then why does he have like 20 minutes about Ovaltine? He thinks anything that's round is funny.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a good one. I totally forgot about that one. Mm-hmm. My number four, going to number four. My number four is the chicken roaster.
This is the
episode where Kenny Rogers' roaster's chicken moves in across the street from Jerry's apartment, and then the giant red chicken just illuminates Kramer's apartment, and he can't. I guess the blinds don't work.
Apparently, the curtains, blinds, nothing works.
And he's just got this red glow from his apartment. I think one of the funnier parts of that is when Kramer opens up the door to Jerry's apartment, or to go back to his apartment, and the red glow shines in, and mm-hmm. Kramer has to lean back because of
has been memified so much in like the last 2 years too, which is great. I don't know if you've seen those, but yes,
such a good episode. And I love the switching of the apartments. Also, switches their demeanor between Jerry and Kramer. Kramer starts acting like Jerry, and Jerry starts acting like Kramer. And That's the one with the hat too, where Elaine actually gets audited by the accountants
because
she was using the Peterman account, and George bought a Sable hat.
Yes, and it's the only thing he would wear out in the winter because it trapped all his body heat.
Yeah, he didn't need to wear a coat. Then he left it at some girl's house that he liked, but she didn't like him.
Right.
And it was his thing to leave behind, and she lost it, and he, mm-hmm. he had to get a new one. And it was Jerry's friend Bob Sacamano who got the rat hats. There's just all the parts in that episode with the different characters and their different stories are really good. Elaine trying to tell the accountant, all the things she bought personally are used for around the office, which is hilarious because she's got a goose down comforter that she's wearing as a tunic.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, yeah.
And using the water pick as a plant water to water her plants. That's, yeah. There's just a lot of good in there. And then the part with Newman when Jerry catches Newman. When he's like Newman orders broccoli for Kramer because Kramer's not supposed to eat the chicken because he's protesting the chicken. So then Kramer's been buying all his food and then Kramer gets the broccoli and Jerry goes, Kramer, or he goes, Newman, broccoli? You wouldn't eat broccoli if it was deep fried in chocolate. And Newman goes, I love broccoli, and then he eats it and he spits it out mid eating it, vile weed. And he asks for honey mustard, a shot of honey mustard, and the way he takes it is like it was strong honey mustard too.
Downs it.
Oh yeah, that one could almost be one of my favorite.
That's the
ones
thing, like you start thinking about what else is in that episode. Glucose pipes and he says, I've never seen both. I don't think I've seen either onesie or number five. Those sound hilarious. Those are great. And Vinny, you're right. Yep. The Kenny Rogers roasters is great. Now, is there a scene in there where Jerry wakes up and he sees something crawl across and he's like, Mr. Marbles?
Mr. Marbles.
What was Mr. Marbles? I don't even remember.
Mr. Marbles was a ventriloquist dummy.
Okay. And something's just crawling across.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. I'm getting no sleep over there. No sleep. Right. You know, so. That is a great episode. That is a good one. We're going to go through these and ones that I didn't think of. I'm going to probably be like, I should have added that. But
Exactly. Yeah, so. What's your number four?
All right, my number four, this is one I just recently watched a little while ago, and the more I think about it, it's one I've seen probably a dozen times, and that is The Pothole. If you're unfamiliar with The Pothole, Jerry accidentally knocks his girlfriend's toothbrush in the toilet, which that would bother me. For sure, if I did that to Erica's, or if someone did that to mine, because I'm very, very not like that. George drops his keys in a pothole that is paved over, and a restaurant refuses to deliver food to Elaine's address. But my favorite storyline in this whole episode is Kramer doing the adopt a highway. And it's something I remember as a kid. I just thought that was so cool that you could like adopt a highway and they'll put your name on it.
Yep.
But now you have Kramer literally taking it where. He's like, my one stretch, my stretch of 1 mile, you know, it's I'm gonna turn it into a two lane. God, I gotta find that quote now. Hold on here, let me see.
Wide lanes.
Oh, they don't have anything in there. There's nothing in there. Yes, wide lanes. And then they have the traffic report. They're like, someone's painted over the lane markers. It's a disaster on the, you know, and then he's cleaning up the garbage and, you know, going back to the toilet. I'm sorry, the toothbrush in the toilet, you know, his girlfriend then takes something of his in his apartment and throws that in the toilet. And he's like, it could be anything. This whole apartment is a biohazard. You know, that would bother me so much. And it turns out she puts his toilet brush in the toilet bowl. So, great episode. Like I said, I love that scene where he's trying to clean up the paint off the two lanes that he made from four.
Yes.
And then he spills the paint thinner, thank you. And then, you know, here comes the mail truck with Newman, and I can't remember, he hits a sewing machine that someone threw out of their car.
Yes, so in that episode, Elaine creates a fake apartment to get this really good like sea bass or some sort of like
delivery
fish, so she's then they make her the not the landlord,
the
but
custodian.
The super because that's where she's her apartment's the custodial closet, so they make her the super. And she's going to take trash to the dump, the typewriter falls out of her car. I think it's Jerry's car, but and that's what Newman ends up running over. But there's the scene in that that I like is what, because George has to get the keychain out of the pothole. So he's got to jackhammer the pothole, and he's dressed like a construction worker. Lane's dressed like a super, and I forgot who else. I think might have been Kramer, but they kind of all pass each other in the street, and they're all like kind of like just like tip their cap to each other because yes. they're all doing manual labor away from their normal, you know, white collar jobs. It's I think that scene in that episode's pretty funny.
Yeah, the one of the opening scenes is Kramer, you know, walks in smoking a cigar, and he's like, "Jerry, I'm a papa." And Jerry's
That's
response
right.
is, "Nothing's throwing me at this point. Bring it on." And he's like, "I am now the proud parent of a 1 mile stretch of the Arthur Burkhart Expressway. I'm part of the solution now, Jerry. I went down there and I checked it out this morning. Here, take a look. Mile 114. I'm beaming, Jerry." It's awesome. And I love you. Then he goes on. This parenting thing isn't about delegating responsibility. It's about being there.
Right.
So, great episode. That is my number four, The Pothole.
Nice. Moving on to my number three is The Marine Biologist.
Oh, great episode.
This is one where, George ends up faking his job to the woman he was dating, saying he was a marine biologist because he watched like a documentary on mammal or, you know, dolphins and stuff like that. So he, you know, came up with the profession of marine biologist, which ends up backfiring at the end because there's a beached whale. And that whole speech and dialogue that he does when he tells that story, that's another reason why this is number three, is that they had to do that in one take because I don't know if I have told you about that. We talked about that on this show, but they had to do that in one take because they wanted an honest reaction from the audience.
Yes.
And they figured if they did it more than once, the punchline of the story would have been ruined. So they had to do it in one. And that was like, they were freaking, like, I think if you watch Jerry's expression, he was talking about that. Like, you can see he's like really excited that George is like nailing it. And he's like, get there. Like, you're almost there. Like, that's probably one of the best endings.
Yes.
Of a show for Seinfeld was that part. But, and that was the one where Jerry, or is it Kramer, gives Elaine an electronic organizer that breaks.
With testicles.
And it's the Russian author throws it out of the car and it hits
that
lady
noise.
In the head. Yep. It was just, that was a good episode.
That's a good one. I read somewhere, it might have been on IMDb, they said that the applause for that last closing out scene where he gives the whole monologue, they said that was the longest or second longest, it might have been second longest, audience response, only second to when Kramer comes in and slaps down the money in the contest episode. So yeah, that is a great one. You will see that pop up on my list somewhere later, so I won't say
nice.
Any more about it. But
okay.
that's a great episode there, Vinny. Great choice.
Thank you. What is your number three?
All right. This one, being a baseball fan, I love this one because it literally is the start of analytics in baseball and launch trajectory. And that is The Abstinence, Vinny, The Abstinence. So if you're unfamiliar with this episode, let me give you the rundown and then I'll give you some of my famous quotes. Abstinence allows George to become a genius, but it turns Elaine into an idiot. Jerry gets bumped from career day at his old junior high school.
Love
Kramer
that.
Turns his apartment into a smoking lounge, and the smoke disfigures his face. There's so many good quotes. One interesting piece of trivia, though, that I found on this episode that I thought was fascinating was Phil Morris, who plays
cowboy, right?
Is he the
Is that him?
He's not the smoking cowboy. He's what's his name? The lawyer. I can't think of his name now.
Jackie Childs.
He was in Bosch too. He plays Jackie Childs, and he said he was always frustrated with being confused with Philip Morris, the tobacco company. So when he says the line "tobacco companies, I've been wanting a piece of them for years," he was kind of channeling his inner frustration, he said in an interview. So
I thought that was pretty
funny. All right. So getting back though to launch angle and launch trajectory, George learns through his abstinence that he says hitting is not about muscle. It's simple physics. Calculate the velocity V in relation to the trajectory T, in which G, the gravity, of course, remains a constant. It's not complicated. And he's talking to Derek Jeter and Bernie Williams. And then they just ask him, who are you?
Right.
He's like, oh, you're the guy that put us in that Ramada in Milwaukee. And his favorite line, which I still quote to this day, do you want to talk about hotels or do you want to hit some ball? Do you want to win some ball games? And they're like, dude, we won the World Series. And he's like, right. Yeah, in six games. And then he hits a home run. So,
right.
I love that whole scene. I love the fact that he keeps getting smarter and smarter. But then at the end, when he shows up to do his presentation at the junior high, he's totally dumb. Cause I believe at that point, his girlfriend who had mono doesn't have mono anymore. And he's like, take me to your leader. He gets all weird and goofy.
No.
No, that's not it. What's that from?
He does do that with the test tubes after
that's
he gets
it.
Dumb again.
That's it.
But he actually, his girlfriend doesn't have mono. He still
yes.
rejects her because he wants to be smart.
That's right.
But
that's
then
right.
He meets a Portuguese
and he
waitress, and
odds.
He's like, I did the calculation, and the odds of me having sex with a Puerto Rican waitress are, well, that just wasn't, you know, never going to happen again. He just couldn't even think about what the calculation was. So then he did that and became dumb. And yeah, then he had the test tubes and was acting like an alien. It was pretty funny.
I also love, too, you know, Jerry's at the junior high. He gets booked for the junior high and they have a fire drill, I believe. So he gets bumped.
Yep.
And Kramer comes in. He's like, that junior high is trying to screw with your head. And he's like, why would a junior high want to screw with my head? And I love his response is, why does Radio Shack ask for your phone number when you just want to buy batteries? I don't know. It's like,
right?
What does it have to do with anything? So I absolutely love that episode. I love the fact that Kramer with the smoking lounge, I think there's a line somewhere that he's like, you've packed a lifetime of smoking into like 1 week, you know, with all
right.
the people. And he's like, oh, I made a side deal. And he ends up being the new cowboy, like on the billboard or whatever in Times
yep.
Square. Yeah, love that episode, The Abstinence. That's my number three.
That's a great one, yeah. And, I just like the when Jerry's looking at him, he's got, like, the tar on his teeth and
mm-hmm.
his face just looks like I think Jerry called it, like, a catcher's mitt.
Yeah.
And he's like, Jerry, look away. I'm hideous.
I'm hideous.
and
I think
yeah,
he's like, I got, and then Smokers come up, he's like, I got a little room and unfiltered, so you're going to have to make your way back there. You know, he's got all these
yeah.
sections for smoking. Yeah,
exactly. So. But yeah, that's a great episode. Okay. Moving on. My number two is a two-parter.
Ooh.
I just lumped it into one.
Sure, sure.
It is The Boyfriend parts one and two.
That's a good one.
This is the one with Keith Hernandez
mm-hmm.
And the famous story of how
Magic Loogie.
What
the Magic Loogie, right?
Is exactly right. Yes, they Kramer and Newman were supposedly spit on. They believe they were spit on by Keith Hernandez, and Jerry goes into the whole telling of the story of how. Because they were telling Elaine that, you know, Keith Hernandez has spit on him because Elaine was actually dating Keith Hernandez at the time and they didn't like him and she wanted to know why. So Jerry ends up telling the story of the Magic Loogie, which was just a reenactment of the Kennedy assassination pretty much. And yeah, so that whole retelling of that story, it also was had George trying to get more unemployment benefit, and so he was trying to go for that, and he had to create Vandalay Industries, and he was Jerry's latex salesman and that whole ordeal with the back and forth between him, you want to be my latex salesman? And then when Kramer ruins that when she calls and Vandalay Industries, no, you're way off, no one's here by Vandalay Industries. And was it that's when George hears him talking about Vandalay and he comes running out of the bathroom with his pants around his ankles and trips and falls, and Jerry walks in with George with his, you know, just underwear on
Vandalay,
and he's like, yeah, he's, you want to be my latex salesman. Yeah, that was good. And that's part two keeps going on to, you know, that relationship with Elaine. But
yeah,
Jerry also is developing a friendship with Keith. So there's like the tension between Elaine and Jerry fighting for Keith's attention. And at one point, Keith asks Jerry to help him move. And Jerry gets all weirded out because, you know, he just met the guy. Can't help him move. And mm-hmm. and it was funny. I think it was Kramer in the episode puts in the idea that, well, why are you going to, like, he makes it sound like they're going all the way pretty much for a guy relationship if he helps Keith Hernandez move. And then at the end of the episode, Keith, you know, Jerry tells him, you know, he can't help him move and the friendship's moving too fast. And then as he's walking out, it was Newman and Kramer that were there, and he's like, oh, what are you gonna do? After Keith Hernandez tells him who actually spit on him, they're like, oh, what are you up to now? And he goes, oh, I gotta move. And they're like, oh, we'll help you. And so then they run off with Keith Hernandez and help him move, which is pretty funny. But yeah, that was the, I think that whole Keith Hernandez doing the reenactment of that is just iconic, I think, for the Seinfeld series.
That's such a good one. It's such a good one. I think you nailed it. I just the whole, you know, the like Zapruder film-esque type of video they filmed, you know, with the, like, what would it be, the sepia tone, you know, overlay and stuff like that. But no, that is such a good episode. And it's so weird, like, to think that, you know, they got such a big star. I mean, he wasn't too far removed from his playing days. You know what I mean? It's kind of crazy. So that is a great episode. That definitely made my honorable mentions list for sure.
Yep. All right. What is your number two?
My number two, you mentioned it earlier, and that is the marine biologist.
Nice.
I think really, you know, I like the Testakov with the electronic planner and it getting thrown out the window and he's upset. And, you know, the lady that gets hit wants to find out why it happened and stuff like that. Yep. That's great. But for me, the whole thing is the final speech. That literally just nails the entire episode. It just that culminating thing is so good. I did pull it up if you want me to read parts of it if you feel like laughing.
Sure.
But all right, if you don't remember that whole premise, and I know, you know, we talked about it earlier with Vinny, but Kramer is getting into golf and he's hitting golf balls. He's teeing off into the, I don't remember, is he just teeing off into the Atlantic or was it the Hudson River?
Yeah, he's just driving into the ocean. It's just a driving range for him.
And so you don't really, you know, that's about it in terms of that. I mean, there's a little bit more to that storyline. But then, you know, George is dating this girl that Jerry knew from college and he says he's a marine biologist. And of course, George cannot, you know, tell the truth. So he goes along and, you know, they're sitting at the diner at the end. And he's like, you know, the sea was angry that day, my friends, like an old man trying to send back soup in a deli. I got about 50 feet out and suddenly the great beast appeared before me. I tell you, he was 10 stories high if he was a foot. And as if sensing my presence, he let out a great bellow. And I said, easy, big fella. And then I watched him struggling. I realized something was obstructing his breathing. From where I was standing, I could see directly into the eye of the great fish. And Jerry says it's a mammal. And he's like, whatever.
Yeah, right.
And then out of nowhere, a huge tidal wave lifted me, tossed me like a cork. I don't know where that comes from. And I found myself right on top of him, face to face with the blowhole. I could barely see the waves crashing down upon us, but I knew something was there. So I reached in my hand, felt around, and I pulled out the obstruction. And the way he does it, where he's kind of like holding it, and then he opens his hand, and Kramer's like, oh, a Titleist, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, then he's like, oh, yes, they did, Jerry. The crowd went wild. They were all over me. I was like Rocky. Diane came up and threw her arms around me and kissed me. We both had tears streaming down our faces. I never saw anyone so beautiful. It was at that moment that I decided to tell her I was not a marine biologist. Well, what'd she say? She told me to go to hell, and I took the bus home. Like, just that's the ending. Such, again, I'm not doing it any justice, but you look that up on YouTube or watch that episode on Netflix. It is phenomenal. And like you said, the fact that they got that all pretty much in one take to kind of keep the excitement for that scene is just phenomenal. That is my number two with a bullet, the marine biologist.
Nice. Very good.
Yes.
On to number ones. Do you want to do number ones or do you want to read submissions.
We can do our number ones to wrap up ours since we're on a roll here, I guess.
Okay. I will wrap it up with my number one, and I'm curious if this is your number one.
All right.
It is The Strike.
No, that is not my number one.
The Strike. This one is the one where Kramer gets back to going to making bagels.
It's a good one.
The strike is over. This is also the famous Festivus episode.
Yes.
Where you know, they reinvigorate Festivus. And Frank, you know, we all find out about Festivus and how it started. It was what Frank was at the he was getting George a doll for Christmas, and mm-hmm. as he was fighting a man from the forgetting the last one, I think he said, like, as he was on top of the man beating him with his fist as he came to, he realized there's gotta be a better way, or it's something along the lines of that. He's physically beating somebody,
pummeling
up
a man. Yeah, yes.
He has this revelation that he needs to create his own holiday season. Yeah. And the Festivus is, there's no tree because he finds tinsel distracting. it's just, you know, it's just a great Jerry Stiller episode. But you know, Kramer ends up working at the bagel store, and then he goes on strike again because he's, you know, they don't recognize Festivus as a holiday and they're infringing upon
his
walkout.
right
you know, that whole part of the story is great. It's also with George giving donations to the human fund.
Oh, I forgot about that.
So, which is just a made up thing because
charity,
he didn't want to give gifts. Cause I think somebody gave him a card that said it was a donation.
Yes.
In his honor
name.
To the ballet or something.
Yes.
He thought it was a piece of, you know, it was an awful gift. And so he was going to, you know, just make up cards and say he was making a donation to the human fund. And then his, moronic boss, Mr. Kruger, gave him a check to donate to the human fund.
Was it for 20 grand? Was that what it was?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
Then George was going to become a philanthropist.
Yes.
He could be a kick-ass philanthropist. and yeah, so that whole thing, and then the feats of strength, and yeah, it's such a great episode. So it is my number one because, again, you know, Frank Costanza is probably one of the funniest characters
show. I feel like, is it Kramer who's all on board, and then once they have the Festivus dinner, and he's like, at one point he gets up, he's like, "Oh, Frank, this holiday is, you know, he's like,
yeah,
it's a little out there for me." And it's like, for Kramer to say that, it cracks me up every time. That is a great, again, one of my honorable mentions for sure. So,
exactly.
Exactly. All right, my number one. I don't know if it's necessarily like the best episode out there, but it is definitely my favorite for sure. Actually, it does have a 9.5 rating on IMDb, which I think is pretty high for them. So, all right, my number one is The Opposite.
Oh, nice.
So, if anyone doesn't know that one, George decides to turn his life around by doing the exact opposite of what he would usually do. Elaine's having bad luck. Jerry keeps breaking even. That whole concept with the two of them, I love, mm-hmm. like, where he just takes a $20 bill and doesn't he just chuck it out the window? Or does Elaine mm-hmm. chuck it out the window? I can't remember.
Elaine does. Yep.
He loses a gig. He books another one, and Elaine just can't get back in good graces. And then Kramer has the coffee table book about coffee tables.
Yes.
Ends up on Regis and Kathy Lee, which I thought was hysterical.
That's right.
I love this guy. And then he's bonkers. Then doesn't he spill the coffee on Kathy Lee, or I can't remember, something happens.
Yes, he does that, and I think he like punches Regis, like he hits Regis while trying to like clean off the coffee or something like that. Yeah.
But again, for me, it's another, you know, Jason Alexander is George Costanza, like his, and again, I don't know if it's his delivery or the lines, but when he's sitting in the diner and he's so upset and morose and depressed cuz his, you know, he's unemployed, he's living at home. And then it's just this line. I love this. Why did it all turn out like this for me? I had so much promise. I was personable. I was bright. Maybe not academically speaking, but I was perceptive. I always know when someone's uncomfortable at a party. It becomes very clear to me sitting out here today that every decision I've ever made my entire life has been wrong. My life is the opposite of everything I want it to be. Every instinct I have, every moment of my life, be it something to wear, something to eat, it's all been wrong. And then I love when he's like, nah, I'm going to have, let me find it here. You know what? Chicken salad is, I'm going to have chicken salad on rye, untoasted, and a cup of tea. Ha ha! Like, he does these weird right thing there. And then
that
Elaine's
was a good,
like,
that was a good George ha-ha.
Thank you.
There.
Thank you.
Good impression.
You know, it's that New York accent that I'm cultivating.
Yes.
And then Jerry's like, you know, chicken salad isn't the opposite of tuna because salmon is the opposite. It's salmon swims against the current and tuna swim with it. And
wait,
George
wait, Hold on.
What?
What is it? What fish is that?
Salmon.
There
what
you
I
go.
Say? I say salmon.
Salmon. Salmon that was the
salmon
whole
Rushdie? Yeah, the
salmon Rushdie. Sal bass, Jerry bass. He just picked a different fish.
Salmon. Sorry. No one's ever corrected me if I have ever said that. It's a good
I had to put a stop to it.
It's a good thing I don't eat a lot of salmon. Actually, I've never eaten salmon. But I just love where he's like, you know, they swim against it. And George is like, good for the tuna. You know, he's just all that. So, yeah. Bald men with no jobs and no money who live with their parents don't approach strange women. But yep. Love that episode. That is my number one for sure. Such a good episode. Just all three stories just kind of come together, and I love it. So that's my number one.
That's a good one. That's a good
one. All right.
One.
What do you think?
Did you have any honorable mentions? I didn't write any down.
Oh,
but
yeah. The parking garage, the calzone, the Frogger, the boyfriends, the library. I love Lieutenant Bookman. I love that. I was so bummed when that guy passed away last year or this year.
Yep.
The dealership when Kramer, you know, the insider deal, the candy lineup, that. And then obviously the Festivus episode that you mentioned. Yeah, those are my honorable mentions for sure.
Nice. Oh, that's right. The dealership one's the one where Kramer takes the car out and they use all the gas, right? He wanted to see which.
Yeah, how far could he go?
I like that. You want to see how far you can use your friend's car without actually having to pay for gas.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. I've been to the line, my friend, or something like that.
Yeah.
Glucose writes in, he said, I like the episode where Kramer turns the end of his hallway into a porch and gets a screen door, and then the kids start harassing him. That's such a good episode.
Is that Serenity Now?
I think that is the Serenity
That's
Now,
the
which
one
would
where
also
he freaks
be another great honorable mention, yeah.
Yes, that is a really good one. I just like that where, yeah, he's like, where are you at, Kramer? Is Anytime USA, and then he's got like the wind chimes there that he hits.
And I love, too, if that's the Serenity Now, that's where Lloyd Braun is selling computers with George, right? And then I think Frank's at one point, it's like, his computer's not even plugged in or something like that.
His phone's not even plugged in. That was at the end when they realized that Lloyd Braun wasn't selling any computers, and George was the only one selling computers, which was just George buying the computers to win his parents' affection and win the prize. And,
right.
And then what was it? Then Kramer destroys all of them because he was saying Serenity Now so much, and he went crazy.
Serenity Now, Insanity Later, you know?
Yep, so. And then what was it? Was it Frank was saying Hoochie Mama? That's what Kramer told Jerry. That was the code word for Kramer, or Jerry to turn on the water so he could spray the kids with the hose that were tormenting him.
That's right.
And they silly stringed him because Jerry never turned on he never was able to get the hose working. Yeah.
Ah, such a good episode. Yes, Frank was great in Serenity Now. I agree with that. So, should we get to honorable mentions and call it a
night? Yeah, you want to go first?
Sure.
Read
all
Greg's.
Right. My buddy Greg wrote in, not Greg, co-host Greg, but he said there's plenty of great episodes, but there's only one greatest of all time. It's definitely The Strike, mostly due to Jerry Stiller's fantastic lines. Many Christmases ago, I went to buy a doll for my son, which, yeah, you said when he realized he was pummeling another man as he rained blows against him. Airing of grievances.
He said rain blows against him.
Oh. There had to be another way. I got a lot of problems with you. My son tells me your company stinks to Kruger. And until you pin me, George, Festivus is not over. Let's rumble. Stop crying and fight your father. So that is Greg's number one for sure.
That's great. Sean writes in the one with the Jimmy, the special shoes. Yeah, that's a really good one. That's the one where Kramer wears the shoes that are supposed to help you.
With your jump, right?
Was that jumping? Was? Yep. Yeah. And it was Jimmy was the one that was like dunking, and so George bought in on it, and he was gonna show it to Foot Locker, and then Jimmy gets hurt because Kramer hurts him. Jimmy slipped in the bathroom because Kramer had gone to the dentist, and he had Novocaine and was drooling water everywhere all the lock. Over the locker room floor. So
that's right. I forgot.
And that's the one where he gets invited to the special ed banquet or whatever. And Elaine's like there, and Kramer's telling her that he's going to be the guest of honor. And she's like, what are you talking about? He goes, well, the guy met me and he's impressed with the things that I do. And she goes, what do you do? You don't do anything. And then Jerry's like, put it all together. Wait, he had Novocaine. He's wearing the big shoes. They thought he was. And then he gets punched. And then was it Mel Torme's there? The Velvet Fog.
Yeah,
and they're singing and everything.
That's right.
That was a really good episode.
That's right.
Sean writes in, did Glucose have something in the chat?
Oh, yes. Glucose said, hold on, let me pull it up here. He said, the one with George getting a rocking chair for the security guard at his fiance's clothing store is pretty great, too. That's a great one,
That's
too.
Good. Yep.
He falls asleep and they get robbed, yeah.
Sean writes in, when Jerry buys a new car, number three, when the park when they park in the handicap spot.
Yeah.
Number four, Festivus. Number five, when George didn't read Breakfast at Tiffany. Sorry for not looking up the actual titles. Not in any specific order, man. This stuff was a difficult one to break down to just five. Yep,
yes,
I agree. And yes, it's totally fine. I think everybody knows what you're talking about when you say those episodes.
For sure.
The handicap spot one was they were getting a TV.
Yes.
For it was like a welcome gift they were getting somebody, or
was that
like
what was the guy's name? And they're like, I don't even like him anymore. I can't remember
oh,
his name.
They end up getting
the Drake. Was that for the Drake?
The Drake, yes. I think they got the Drake and his
and then they
Mrs.
break
Drake.
Up. Yeah, don't
they
break
up
then?
And then they got the TV back, and then they were donating it to.
That's right.
I think it was Kramer's girlfriend because he bought her the. She was the one in the wheelchair that fell backwards because she ran out of battery, and then they bought her
a broken
wheelchair
one, yes.
And then that went down the hill and the brakes were out on it. So that was a good one.
Scoreboard Addicts Podcast writes in the boyfriend episode with Keith Hernandez and the Magic Loogie for sure.
Yep.
Good choice there.
Dorm Dispute Podcast writes in way too hard to pick Frogger, Face Painter, and Understudy are instant classics, though. Yes, those. I think the Understudy, that's the
Bette Midler
one.
Yes.
Or
no,
is,
wait.
Oh,
it?
The under. That's right. The
that's
nope, the
softball
Understudy
episode,
is with
Bette
the Bette Midler. Yeah, that's right.
And then doesn't Kramer end up making like a Bette Midler out of like pasta? And she's like,
yeah,
oh,
I can't.
Okay.
Was it Macaroni Midler?
That was it. For, because she was doing
the Fusilli Jerry.
Yes, she was doing the play version of from Milan to Minsk. What was that? Rochelle.
Yep, and he abducts her and takes her to his apartment.
Yes, so good. 1420 Sports Podcast said the Serenity Now episode, which we talked about.
Hector writes in on Twitter and says the Susie because of George's voicemail. That's the believe it or not,
George
isn't
at
home,
so leave a message after the
beep. He was screening his calls for somebody, right?
Yes. And I love that. That's the episode where they kill off Susie, right?
Is that the one where they kill her off?
And then because then they're at the funeral and Jerry's talking to. the other coworker of Elaine that, didn't like Susie. And he's like, you know, I had a thing with Susie. I had a thing with her too. And he points to Elaine and she's like,
Yeah, the way he says that is pretty funny.
Yeah, the timing is great. Ultimate Fantasy Hockey Podcast said Festivus episode as well.
Nice. Eric writes in, King of the Castle, Master of My Domain.
Yes.
That's the jacket episode where they're going to meet with Lane's father,
yes,
who's like a very grumpy man.
Yes,
and George has that stuck in his head, and mm-hmm. and that's one that the line in that when he's got that that song stuck in his head, mm-hmm. and Jerry's like, yeah, that, you know, that happened to Schumann, and George acts like he knows. He goes, Schumann? He goes, no, oh, Schumann, yeah, oh, I know exactly who you're talking about, Jerry. Like, you know, how George plays it off when he doesn't understand what somebody's talking about but doesn't want to appear to be, like, an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
He acts like he knew who he was talking about. But that was, that's a good episode. That episode does make me angry, though, because it's like he should have just, like, it was only a couple blocks. I would have just worn it inside out and told the old man just to shut his mouth. Like,
yeah,
I'm gonna wear, like, I'll walk some feet back so I'm not next to you guys if you're really that upset about it.
Yeah,
but I wouldn't have ruined that jacket because they never did say how much it cost.
No,
but it was a lot of money
for sure. Vinny Pretzel Vince, your dad, writes in. He said his number 5, the boyfriend, number 4, the fire. That's a great one too. I completely forgot
that
about that one. It's funny, whenever
John Favreau's in that one.
Yes, that's right, he's the clown, right?
Clown, yep.
You know, I want to say Eric and I were watching that one, and your sister said, oh, that would be you knocking everyone. Not you as in you, me. She said, well, that would be me knocking everyone down. I kind of took offense to that. I'm like, I wouldn't do that.
I could see that.
I would get Maddie out and then bowl over Erica, and we'd be fine.
Well, that Eric would have Maddie and Mac and bowl you over.
Bowl me over, yeah.
Right?
He also says number 3, the Merv Griffin show. Oh, that's such a good
one, too. That's a good one, too.
Number 2, the parking garage, great episode. And number 1, the Soup Nazi episode. First time we've had a mention of the Soup Nazi episode.
Oh, yeah, totally forgot. Yo, that's another one that slipped my mind.
That's
another really, really good one.
That is a good one.
Was it the Merv Griffin show? Does he have Jack Hanna on?
Yeah, not Jack Hanna. He has Jack somebody. It's not. Oh, God. I can't remember. I'll have to look that up. It's not Jack Hanna. It's somebody else that does.
Okay. But I like that whole thing where they're like, Kramer's like, oh, we're going to have so-and-so on. They're like, oh, wow. How do you know that?
Yeah.
He goes, oh, I practically raised his kids.
Shoot, I'm trying to
he owes me a favor.
Trivia. Let's see. Quotes. Who was that now? I'm trying to figure out who that was. I love when he's like, Jim Fowler. That's who it is.
Okay.
He's like, where are the cameras?
Right.
Get that squirrel out of here, you idiot.
Yeah.
Okay. Your dad also mentioned his honorable mentions. The Chaperone. That's a great episode, too.
Yep.
The Limo, the Library, and the Chicken Roaster with Kenny Rogers Roaster. Oh, boy, it's getting late. Go ahead. You can take the next one, Vinny.
Jay Bird writes in. He goes, Frasier is so much better.
I've never watched
Frasier. I'm just going to say that Jay Bird is a guy that is really pulling for Andor. So I'm just going to throw that out there as in his critiquing and his ability to rate shows as being good. He's a big fan of Andor, so we'll just leave it at
that. You know, the one thing I got to say, and I've never really watched Cheers, just in passing, seen scenes here and there, and I've never really watched Frasier besides a couple scenes here in passing, but Kelsey Grammer's character in Cheers seems so different than his character in Frasier, and they're the same character. I don't know. It's I never understood, like, there's a disconnect there. I don't get it.
I agree. Yeah, I don't know how and when the connection. I would need to see, like, the first episode his last episode in Cheers and his first episode in Frasier and see how they really compare. Obviously, I'm sure there's some evolution in the character there. But he was in Cheers, he was kind of a dorky, wimpy kind of guy.
Yeah. And in Frasier, it always seemed like him and his brother were just so like highfalutin, high society, you know,
exactly,
better than thou kind of thing. But
wouldn't be at a bar, and everything,
in Boston,
slumming it up.
Yeah.
But I guess you're next.
Yes, Erica says Chinese restaurant, the movie, and we were talking about that one. That's the one I believe where they are all trying to meet at the movie theater, and I think they go to different theaters, different you know areas. And then lastly, the parking garage, she said, was her one of her favorites as well.
Nice. The movie, I think that's the first time we see Rochelle. I think that's where they all end up at. That's a good one.
Journey from Milan to Minsk.
Yes. Yep.
Very good.
Scott writes in, Seinfeld is better than The Office.
That's it. That's all he had to say today.
That's
my dad. Yeah, he was okay. They're in to watch Maddie. They were in to watch Maddie today while we were at work, and he's like, "What's your topic this week?" I said, "We're talking Seinfeld," and I go, "You don't know any Seinfeld episodes?" He's like, "I've seen a few." Oh man, we got another bot in the chat. How does this keep happening? Damn it. Anyway, he's like, "I've seen some few. They're pretty good." And he goes, "I don't know any specific ones off the top of my head, but I can tell you that it's better than that show, The Office." And I'm like, oh, God, all right. That's all he had for me. So
I have to ask, what did your dad do for work?
So he worked for ComEd. He was he started there when he was in high school, and I mean, he worked there his whole life. But he mostly did, like, he drove the semis for ComEd. He did he worked in the shop. Or, you know, was in charge of their shop.
Okay.
One of the things. So more manual labor.
It makes sense that he wouldn't like The Office because he's never worked in that setting.
In that
before.
Setting, no.
I mean, he would probably like the episodes where they, like, show
the
warehouse workers making fun of Michael Scott. Because I'm sure he's probably.
He hates Michael Scott's character.
He probably had some run-ins with guys that were like that. Of it. And, because I know Gretchen's parents, they, you know, her dad's owns auto mechanic shop, and you know, she goes, they don't find that show funny because they don't get it,
right?
And it makes sense. If you don't work in an office, you've never worked in an office setting in your life, you wouldn't find the appeal or the humor in a lot of what has happened.
So that's literally all he had to say. It was just that Seinfeld is better. So
I get
I don't know. I guess that's it, Vinny. We've made it to another show. We're done. I'm exhausted.
Man.
I'm ready for bed.
I am too.
All right. You got any other final takeaways that you need to share with the folks?
I don't. No, not today.
No. All right. Well, on that note, write in. Let us know what your favorite Seinfeld episode was, if you have one. You can like, share, and subscribe on youtube.com/baseballwhatever. You can find us on Twitter @baseballandwhat. If it's still standing, I haven't been on Twitter since we started the show. Instagram @baseballwhatever. We're going to start pushing that more. Email us @baseballwhatever@gmail.com. You can listen to us on all podcast apps. If you're on Apple or Spotify, give us a 5-star review. We would greatly appreciate it. And lastly, leave us a voicemail or text in at 1-913-808-3278. That number again is 1-913-808-FARTS. And that's it. We'll be back next week. Hopefully there'll be some actual MLB free agency to really talk about. That would be great. We would definitely appreciate that.
We won't be back
that.
Next week.
Oh, wait. We won't be back next week because that's Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving.
Have a great Thanksgiving. Glucose writes in. He said, I worked in a warehouse and I loved making fun of the office people. So, yes, I think he gets it. Like Vinny said, have a great Thanksgiving. Eat lots of food. Find some good Black Friday deals if you're into that sort of thing. We will be back in 2 weeks with more tomfoolery and fun on Baseball and Whatever. See you guys later.
See ya.
Justin can't find the button to switch the transitions. All right, bye, everybody.